It's not even Valentine's Day yet, but she's resplendent in red today. Catherine Mackus, good morning.
Good morning, Mary.
We are so glad to have you here to talk about the Community Foundation. Some people say, you have them on once a month? But I said, but they're so important. And one thing I want to do at the Mary Griffith Show is let people know that there are really good things happening in our community. Because sometimes in the morning with the news, ugh. I mean, it's bad stuff. Let's face it. This morning we talked about child care shortage, a housing shortage, a worker shortage, you know, everything you could possibly come under the sun. We talk sometimes, and it's bad news. So hopefully we have some good news today from Catherine Mackus with the Community Foundation. Welcome aboard.
Thank you so much, Mary. Always a pleasure to be here.
It is so great, and there are so many facets to what you do and so many different funds that are in the Community Foundation. So today we're going to kind of focus on one specific fund, and that is community endowments, better known as unrestricted endowments. This is when people really get excited that work at the Community Foundation and your board of directors and the volunteers that help allocate money. Because unrestricted funds means that people have decided that after they're gone, they won't know what Quincy needs or what this area needs, the tri-state area needs, but somebody in the community will know what is needed, and they'll put that money towards that good cause. Did I get it right?
You absolutely did, and you mentioned the word unrestricted endowment, and I think that there's sometimes a little bit of a misunderstanding of what it means to be an unrestricted endowment, meaning, you know, we can do whatever we want with it, and you know, there's no limits to it, and you know, we can use it to, I don't know, buy new chairs at the office or something like that. But that's why we kind of try to refer to them as community endowments, because they are restricted in the sense that these are funds that are used for grant making to other nonprofit organizations in our 12 county service area. So it's restricted in the fact that these are going to be used to support our community and support our region, not just today, but forever. And they are so important because, to your point, Mary, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what those needs, what those opportunities are going to be.
Oh, come on. You saw COVID coming.
you know, we know there's going to be issues, you know, whether it's COVID or bird flu, or hopefully more positive things. Hopefully, it's more opportunities. But
I'd like to apply for an endowment fund to buy a dozen eggs. I feel that I'm very much egg deprived right now. No, we're making light. We shouldn't. But just like that, I mean, 5 years ago, you sat right here with me, and we'd heard of this thing called COVID. You know, we were aware that there was a thing called COVID-19. We knew that something was going to happen. On March 16th, the state of Illinois shut down 5 years ago. So things changed dramatically. But the Community Foundation was ready. Mm-hmm. Right now, we've got this bird flu. Now, again, you're not that involved with that unless you have a health grant or something. But this can really impact our community. People are spending more money on food. Chicken prices are going higher. Egg prices are obviously going higher. And so there are needs that couldn't have been perceived 6 months ago. See, my husband and I were laughing. I said, you know what I really want for Valentine's Day, honey? I just want a dozen eggs. I want an egg for breakfast so bad. We've just chosen not to buy them until the price comes down, you know?
Or you get your own chickens.
Well,
you know?
We have a friend who has a chicken, but they don't lay in the winter.
No, yeah.
Maybe yesterday when it was warm, maybe they popped out a few. I don't know.
But you're right. That's the thing is we can't predict exactly what is going to happen, but we know for certain there's going to be needs. There's going to be things that we need resources for in our community because when the demand goes up on our food pantries and our social services, there needs more resources to help them meet that demand in our community, just for an example. So, yes, I mean, COVID-19, we think of that. March, all of a sudden, there's so much uncertainty. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how long this is going to last. But what we do know is that these nonprofits are going to need an infusion of some cash because they can't open their doors to performances. You know, thinking, you know, just kind of switching gears to the arts, they're relying on performances and these events to bring in operating revenue. And guess what? If we can't have those, that revenue is going to go down. You know, things, again, like your social services, food insecurity is going up. So there's just these increased pressures. And so thanks to community endowment funds, we were able to kickstart an effort right away to start a very quick chain of getting funds back out, emergency dollars out within a week or two of time of the application. And so we don't have a lot of these community endowment funds. They're actually our very smallest pot of money within the community foundation, but arguably our most important in a lot of ways.
They're the most flexible.
Yes. So we put $20,000 into this COVID-19 response fund, and through additional community investment and support, we were able to channel more than $400,000 back into the community within a year of COVID. So sometimes it's just that little bit, and then getting the ball rolling to grow those dollars through additional support.
So the unrestricted funds, they are responsible for responsive grant making. Community grant program opens March 1st. Nonprofits from the entire 12-county region in Missouri and Illinois can apply for a grant of up to $7,500. So this is flexible money that a needy organization, maybe one that has never even thought about applying to the community foundation. A lot of times when we think of needs, we think of huge agencies that maybe have budgets of $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year. But there are a lot of small towns out there that have a food pantry that $7,500 would be a huge difference. That could keep their shelves stocked probably all year long and help with maybe distributing out in the area for folks who don't have a car and can't get to the food bank.
Absolutely. So, yes, community endowment funds, in addition to, these kind of, like I mentioned, the emergency response with COVID, we use community endowment funds every year to support our community grant program. And this is the one program we have every year where we invite any nonprofit in our 12-county area to let us know what they need or what they want to do, and we can help provide a little seed money for it. These aren't massive grants, like you said, $7,500, but it's enough to make a difference. And our hope with these community endowment funds, since there is no geographic restriction aside from our service area, that we're able to help channel some of these funds into those communities that have less support.
Well, let's talk about that, because this Mary Griffith Show, it covers your entire range of people that are in the community foundation. So if somebody's listening out there and they live in a small community and they've always thought, well, Quincy always gets this or Hannibal always gets that, you can get it too. You're an equal partner in the community foundation. There is no prejudice against where somebody lives. You have to write a good proposal for a grant to clearly state what your need is. This is where the rubber hits the road. So many people say, but I don't have an executive director. We're just a small group of volunteers that are trying to shelter kitty cats or feed the hungry or provide swimming lessons for kids, and keep the pool open in our small town. So do you help these people apply for the money? Do you teach them the lingo and get them in I know there's a grid. You don't just write an essay, I need the money because. There is a grid, there's a form. How much help do you give people to make them able to do this?
So I don't know if there's any grant committee or board members listening, so cover your ears. But I always say I really want to make our grant committee's job really difficult every year. The harder it is, it means there's that many really great applications.
It's only slightly less hard than being the judge at a baby contest, but that's the problem. Nobody takes it, they want that for, children with no shoes. Who cares?
No.
I mean, every grant you get is worthwhile, and that is why it's so important that they frame it and take it and just show how they're going to use the money very effectively.
Exactly. And it doesn't have to be long. I think that there's sometimes a misunderstanding. It's like, oh, the more I write, the more the better it's going to be, but sometimes that clarity and just really succinctly being able to explain the need or the opportunity and how you're going to address that and why you need those funds to do it, that's what you need. But yes, we offer support. We don't have the dates finalized yet, but we will be offering workshops over Zoom so that they're very accessible for everybody. Kent Embry, our program officer, will be hosting several Zoom sessions to kind of walk through the application and provide some best practices. We also offer one-on-ones So, you know, you go through that workshop, you still have some questions, you kind of want to write your draft up and have Kent review it and come back and help you walk through it and point out any areas you might need to flesh out a little bit more. We'll do that. You schedule that appointment. And then we're going to partner with Tri-State Fundraising Professionals in April. I don't have that date in front of me, but more to come in April to do kind of a financial focused program. To really think about, okay, what are these financial documents that regardless of your grant application, you need to have as a nonprofit organization, you need to have these in, you know, to make sure that you're complying with everything. And then, you know, how those are used in a grant application as well. So yes, we do want to offer as much support as possible to help nonprofits write not only our grants, but other grants as well.
It's such a skill. And so many people have a full-time job working for a major corporation, like my brother, who do this for a living. Collaborative grant making. Okay, so you leverage. So if somebody says, well, I can get a grant from X if I can get a matching grant, does the Community Foundation get involved in things like that?
Sometimes, you know, not necessarily from unrestricted funds, but we have absolutely leveraged donor advised funds to offer match and help to kind of up the ante. And then, you know, speaking of community grants, if we have a nonprofit that in their grant application say this will be matched by another foundation or another donor by, you know, X percent, that's a positive
thing.
That's a very positive thing.
Because you take $1 and turn it into two or whatever.
That's right. So, yes, matches are always looked upon very favorably. And when we can, we absolutely love to participate in them. But we also use these community endowment funds to not only respond like our community grant program, but to proactively try to strengthen our nonprofit community so that they can be better fundraisers, they can be better at their mission, all of the tools that they need to be stronger nonprofits and make a better impact. So in the philanthropy field, we call this capacity building, which is a little bit of, you know, we all have our jargon, right? But when we're talking about capacity building for nonprofits, we're really just talking about strengthening their mission, giving them the tools that nonprofits need to more effectively do their mission and impact the people that they are working with. And so we have a partnership here on the Illinois side called our Quincy Area Funders Collaborative that we work together to pool our not only our financial resources, but our human resources, our brain power, to put on proactive programs to strengthen a small groups of nonprofits in each cohort. Right now, we're in the middle of the second cohort of the Nonprofit Excellence Initiative.
Okay, so, let's talk about that. I want to take a break real quick, and we'll come back and we'll talk about that. There's just so much that the Community Foundation does, and unfortunately, a lot of people really don't understand it, which is no fault of your own. It can be complex. They have restricted funds, non-restricted funds. You have funds that, like the one my brother and I can control, where we decide where the money goes. It's kind of crazy. There's all this different stuff. But the best thing is, it's all going to a great cause. It's all staying local. So that is what we really want to talk about. We'll be right back. Catherine Bakke-Mekas, the Executive Director of the Community Foundation serving West Central Illinois and Northeast Missouri, is my guest today. And again, when you write a grant, it's not how many words you have. It's not, this is a very, 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 very good thing. That's not going to get you any more money. Let's talk about the cohorts. I love the word. You had the Nonprofit Excellence Initiative and LEAD program that started a couple of years ago. A two-year program to help strengthen mid-sized nonprofits. The first group to go through, Cheerful Home, Bella Ease, Horizons, Quincy Community Theater, and the YMCA. How are the graduates doing?
Well, you know, they're doing great. Obviously, I mean, just doing a really really important work in the community. But just to kind of back, we use these words, we use capacity building, we use cohort, all of these things, but just to really ground us in the purpose of this program, really it's several of us funders here in the area who have banded together to strengthen and increase the overall capacity or effectiveness of nonprofits in West Central Illinois. And so to do this, this actually launched back in spring of 2020,
yeah,
which was an interesting time.
What a great time.
Yes, on Zoom. We have actually a great picture of all of us doing an orientation over Zoom, one of those early Zoom days. But So yes, we basically took a group of nonprofits, kind of this in this middle size, and really worked over 2 years to kind of get some benchmarks. Okay, where are we now? Where are the what are the areas that maybe are giving you a little bit of stickiness, a little bit of challenge that you need to overcome to really get to that next level and continue to grow in your impact? And so we set out with these nonprofits to do three main things: to increase the overall nonprofit organizational effectiveness, to increase the leadership skills of that executive director, because that is critical for any nonprofit or any organization to grow, and then to really advance their competencies. So these individual items that make a strong organization, your financial acumen, your fundraising, all of those different facets to being a strong organization.
And so now the second group that's going through is Good Samaritan Home, Quincy Public School Foundation, Quincy Humane Society, and the Quincy Public Library. Interesting there, kind of two tax-funded areas, but tax dollars do not bring in all they need to make good schools or good libraries. So very different than the Quincy Humane Society or Good Samaritan Home.
Yes.
We get there all together.
Yes.
So,
and one of the, I think, the magic things about this group is, so just we take them through a series of activities. Okay, so we do some assessment to measure where they are when they start, kind of identify what those strengths and weaknesses are. And then we match them with an executive coach. So they have that kind of mentor to help them work through and help them think through any challenges they might be having. We fund training. So again, they might take this assessment and realize, oh, I really need to sharpen my financial management skills. This is a weakness of mine. I didn't go to school for this, and now I'm an executive director and I have to know how to do it all. So we'll fund training that could be through Kellogg or Lilly School of Philanthropy to strengthen that. And then we'll actually fund strategic planning with them as well. So they get kind of this really robust two-year program to dig into themselves as a leader and the strengths and weaknesses of the organization, and then provide the tools they need to enhance it. And so it's really great from a learning perspective. But another facet that we found was a very important part was this group of nonprofit leaders being able to get together. They might be very different in what they're trying to achieve from their organization.
Yeah, Good Samaritan Home has a completely different mission than Quincy Community Theater.
But what's amazing is getting these leaders in a room together and just having the opportunity to brainstorm together and say, you know, I'm having this challenge. Have you guys ever experienced this? Or what would you do in this situation? And just the sharing of ideas and the collaboration is inspiring.
The thing is, as you say, I recently was reading, believe it or not, I've been through a lot of therapy and a lot of leadership things and a lot of things, and I was reading some stuff as I'm trying to downsize my hoard. And one thing I said in there, and I've taken a couple of leadership things, I guess you'd call it, said, quit worrying about what your weaknesses are. Of course, try to improve them. But your strength is your strength, and lead with it.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing what your strength is and what your weakness is, you can pair with somebody. You can spend an awful lot of time and effort trying to make a weakness strength, and you may not ever be able to accomplish it. But if you know, I'll do this, I'll do A, B, and C, but if I could get somebody to do D, that would be the perfect. And that sounds to me like what you're teaching.
That's right. You know, I think a good leader surrounds themselves with people that complement them. And it may not, you know, you want to have a diverse group of volunteers that have different skills. So if you know that, okay, this area is not my strong suit, I'm really good at this, but making sure you have people on your team, whether that's paid staff or your board and volunteers, to really help make sure that that's all being addressed, that's when a strong nonprofit is going to emerge.
Okay. We also want to talk a little bit in the very few remaining moments we have about the LEAD program. Jackson Lincoln Poole, Junior Achievement, Connect Family and Child Solutions, Quincy Catholic Elementary Schools Foundation. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this is, you know, we talked about this two-year program, the NEI, the Nonprofit Excellence Initiative. LEAD is our kind of our newest iteration of this capacity building work, and it's for those small nonprofits who maybe are not quite ready to take on a full two-year, pretty big commitment. So this is a one-year program. They get that coaching, they get those assessments, and they get that support and learning together, but it's going to be a little bit of a lighter version where it's just 1 year. And so, yes, these four smaller nonprofits are all embarking upon this together starting this fall, and they'll wrap up in September of 2025. And again, we hope to see some great growth amongst these leaders of smaller nonprofits who sometimes have a little different set of challenges than some of our larger nonprofits do.
Well, there's a lot of noise. Everybody needs money. Everybody's asking for money. And there's an awful lot of noise out there. And so you've got to stay true to your mission, be able to communicate that mission, get somebody to care about your mission. You know, when I'm asked if I'll be on a board or if I'll give to a charity, I don't hem and haw around and try to say, oh, you know, you're just not worthy of my dollars or you're not worthy of my time. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying I have core things I want to promote. I'm not your best match. Thanks for asking. Have you thought about this? I always try to give them some help in finding somebody who might, you know, for example, I'm not going to give to the Quincy Public Schools Foundation. I didn't go to school there. I have nothing against them. I think they're wonderful. I'm not going to give money to that organization. I give my money to enough organizations. I can't give money to everything. This is one of the problems not-for-profits have. The smaller ones, the ones that are pushed to the back, they don't know how to aggressively or proactively, whichever verb you want to use, go forward and say, this is why we need help, and here's the good we're doing, and here's how you could be a fit for that. That's a hard thing to teach.
It is. So making sure that these nonprofits and the leaders of the nonprofits, whether it's a small nonprofit, a mid-size, large, doesn't matter. Making sure these nonprofits and leaders have the tools in their toolbox to effectively do their job, do it well, and serve our community.
Okay. Anything else for the good of the cause before I have to let you go?
I just say, you know, thank you to all those unrestricted donors out there, whether they've established a fund or just given to our general community endowment fund. Those dollars are being put to work to put on these programs and to make these flexible grants that are just so important to our nonprofit organization. So thank you.
If you need $7,500, get on the Community Foundation website at My Community Foundation. Learn how to fill out the grant. The grant program opens March 1st. They're granting all year round, but this particular one starts March 1st. And $7,500 is a lot of money to a lot of small agencies, so learn more. We're going to take a break, head up to the URSA Farmers Cooperative, and then we're going to turn our attention to politics, a primary election race in the 5th Ward in Quincy. We'll have one of the contestants here with us in just a moment. Remember the good old days when there was a voting day and everybody just went to the polls that day? Well, now that has all changed. We have early voting. It's already underway in the city of Quincy as we have a primary going on for Republicans and Democrats. And Laura McReynolds joins me today. She's a partner at Adams and McReynolds Retirement Partners. She's running as a Republican. She's on the February 25th primary ballot against current 5th Ward Alderman Mike Rhine. Mike Rhine already has been a guest on the Mary Griffith Show. Now we're going to hear from Laura McReynolds. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about yourself and why you were motivated to run for city council.
Okay, well, I think this answer is a little different now that I am running because I've had to like boil down who I am into all these little marketing pieces that I've been mailing out to 5th Ward residents. So I'll just start with the simple facts. I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a small business owner. I happen to be a lawyer and an investment professional. I think those skills particularly could translate to city council. My friends tell me I'm a great listener. I think I'm an excellent puzzle solver, another skill that might translate to city council. I was a political science major. I went to law school. I think people like me, I mean, my mom said, I've been waiting your whole adult life for you to do something like this. So I think people like me, this is just something that's maybe always in the back of your mind. And I'm an empty nester now. So my why is it's more urgent to me. It's more palatable to me or whatever to me right now that I want the next generation to have opportunity to come home. And Quincy's super exciting right now. There's so much growth and development that I can see that opportunity. I mean, there's a storefront that was vacant for 21 of my 22 years in Quincy that's now filled, and the parking lot's filled, and there's people coming and going all the time, and it's really exciting. And I just think about that as just a small picture or a small example of just really Quincy's unlimited potential. And so, yeah, I want a Quincy. And honestly, the residents that I've been knocking on doors, we all want the same thing. We want Quincy to thrive, and we want our next generation to have opportunities so they can either maybe not leave or maybe leave and come back.
Laura McReynolds, how would you particularly help that economic development? You talk about the fact that Quincy is growing right now. We're going in a boom. I want to talk about economic development. I want to talk about streets, housing, all kinds of problems we have, too. So talk about the good, but then we'll
exactly
kind of get to the
right.
bad.
It's two sides of a coin, and I've been learning a lot. So it's interesting because some of the first advice I was given was not to talk about anything that doesn't impact the Fifth Ward. And I thought that was the strangest advice, because just because I live out in Wilmar doesn't mean I don't go downtown to shop or eat, or doesn't mean I don't go out to Broadway to, you know, get my groceries, whatever. So Quincy as a whole is what the city council votes on, in my opinion. And I just thought that was the strangest advice. And there are specific things that happen in the ward. I mean, I met a gentleman who is mowing an area and paying for it out of his own pocket that the city used to do. And there's, you know, there's roads that are now cut throughs that kids are speeding down. I mean, there are issues that impact us directly in our front yard, but all of Quincy impacts us. So the growth side of the coin is the exciting side of the coin. And, of course, the Amazon Distribution Center, the new manufacturing plants.
Nothing in the Fifth Ward.
Nothing in the Fifth Ward. Those are all little
you do have
of
a very
area.
Residential area, don't
yeah.
you? Would you say it's
yeah.
primarily residential?
It is.
Yeah.
It's east of 24th and south of State, so it's all residential. John Wood is out in our ward. The roundabout touches our ward. So there are a few, like,
you
more
brought
public.
It up.
I know. There's a
hey, we finally got a roundabout.
Issues.
It's not in your ward. It's out at the Illinois Veterans Home. So people
there
who wanted
go.
A roundabout can
you
go out
go
and
learn how to do
you
it.
Go run around in it all day long.
You know, I don't have any vested interest in an actual roundabout.
Right.
But this is a decent example of... This issue came up first in 2014, 2017, I think 2017 or 19, I don't remember, 2022. And the thing about 2022 is I looked back at what they said the price tag was. And by 2024, when it comes up again, it's doubled. So there are certain things that get kicked down the road, and I understand that because budgeting is difficult, and I'm not going to second guess the person who's been there for a long time who has had to go through all these budgets. But I think being a good steward of money is not just what we're going to spend today, but how much more are we going to have to spend in the future if this is really a need? And I think all those studies have pretty much shown us that there's a need out there. So
you vote, yeah. As a Fifth Ward alderman, you are voting on, well, every alderman votes on everything that has to do with the city, fire and police pensions.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. Would you be in favor of funding at 104%? Do you want to fund it less?
No, I have heard the other side of the coin. I need to do a little study on that as far as there are people who advocate for not funding at the higher level. But as a financial professional, I would say, what is the difference with having credit card debt? This is a liability on the city's books. And I can go back many, many years and see where the council has voted and said, you know, we're going to have to make good on that eventually. Well, eventually, now it's around $90 million now. It was almost $100 million before we started paying it down a little higher, a higher rate, that 104% you mentioned. So... right now, unless I'm convinced otherwise, I'm in favor of doing the higher funding, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Streets.
Support those guys.
Streets.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be you talked about the million-dollar mile. Guess what? Now it's the million-dollar six blocks.
I know.
How is the city of Quincy going to get enough funding to pay for streets? Because, as you mentioned, Fifth Ward residents drive all over town.
That's right.
But they've also probably got a lot of potholes in the Fifth Ward. And the great thing about being an alderman, it's the same way as being a state representative. Yes, you have legislation you're trying to get for the whole city, but you also have these constituent concerns. So do you feel the current Republican in the seat is responsive to constituent concerns. Is that something you're concerned about? How would you respond to constituent concerns? Because they'll come.
Right. Okay. So as a personal note, I will say that I had a dead tree. I called Mr. Ryan. He said, Laura, listen, there's a list of dead trees, but he did respond to me. That is my own personal experience with our current alderman. Being out on the street and knocking on doors, that is not everyone's experience with our current alderman. So I just want to distinguish there with my own experience versus what I'm hearing. I do think it is a more difficult situation to say to someone, someone's going to be out there tomorrow versus, well, there's a list of 300 dead trees. So
exactly. There is a list of 300 dead trees.
And I think some people are just upset that that's what they hear instead of upset that they don't hear anything. I think other people really are not hearing anything back. So you have to be able to respond to your residents in a very timely fashion. So definitely I would want to do that. And then back to like the potholes and the streets and all that. I know that the streets are a big deal. And I will probably not have a lot of favor in what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. I don't know that the current system of equal money for all the wards is the right system. And I would want to look at that. And I'm maybe shooting myself in the foot for saying that, but there are wards with worse streets than our ward. And so why should we have all equal dollars? So maybe I want equal dollars and we'll see when I get there. But right now I'm looking at that going, that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And I'm a good steward of money. That's what I do for a living. And so I'm just looking at that going, I don't know, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
You're not the only one who has said that, you know, it can't just be divided seven different ways because the city has different needs.
Exactly.
And some areas are much more well-traveled and more traffic.
Exactly. And Fifth Ward residents travel those other roads. Yeah, yeah.
So what other concerns do you have? I mean, you mentioned that, you know, you feel like you've got the time now, you've got the expertise being a lawyer, you have the financial chops to understand a budget and do all that. You say you'll be responsive to needs. When you talk about growth, this growth has come, but it's also had a price tag on it. You know, we have to give these incentives, like the Otis Company is giving incentives.
Yep.
How do you fall on that?
Just last night at the city council meeting, they talked to us about the land value of the Kmart parking lot prior to Target coming. So, yes, we gave incentives, but already we're seeing a return on that. So the property value itself doubled. That means the property tax revenue doubles. And I understand that there's a give and take there because you either get some of something for a while until that incentive goes away and then you get all of it, or you get none of nothing because we sometimes have to incent these people, these outfitters, to come. And the other thing I would say is, having worked in other communities, I mean, I've been here 22 years now, but my prior profession, we had a site acquisition team on our roles, and those site acq people, they see a Target come, and all of a sudden you're on everyone's radar. So I think that's an important give and take and something else to consider when we are giving these incentives.
Some of something rather than nothing of nothing.
Correct.
Now, but how do you then, you know, because I've been to all these city council meetings where people that are restaurant owners, whatever, stand up and say, hey, what about me? I've had my family-owned business here for years, and now Target comes in, or, you know, XYZ comes in, and you guys want to, you know, fawn all over them and give them everything they want. What about me? What about poor old me?
I think that's a much harder conversation to have because you can totally understand where they're coming from. But again, looking at the city as a whole, and Target as an example, I used to drive to Burlington just to go to Target. I mean, that sounds crazy, but people go to St. Louis all the time just to go to wherever. And if we can bring other people from outside this community into this community, then those smaller businesses, I think, benefit from that as well. The tide rises.
Okay, less than 2 minutes. So real quick, a question, then I'll let you wrap it up. Housing is a critical and continuing problem. What can you, as a city councilwoman, as a Fifth Ward alderman, what can you do to help housing in Quincy?
I know from a couple of good conversations I've had with the Safe Housing Committee that there is a real issue on the very low end of rental homes. It is a minuscule number, I think, of actual landlords that are causing the problem. It is certainly not nearly everybody. It is a very small problem, but it becomes a much bigger problem when people don't take
care. Would you be in favor of then the rent landlord registration?
I believe there needs to at least be a registration as far as the, and I've told some big landlords that that's my position, but as far as the inspection and that sort of thing, I think we can come up with some kind of a grading scale, some kind of a compromise where somebody with five houses, you know, that's one thing to pay the fee for five houses. It's another thing to pay the fee for 250 houses. So there are ways, I think, to scale things or to make it a little more even. Violators should obviously maybe have their inspection more often than non-violators. So these types of things.
Okay,
and then there's
Laura,
a middle-class housing problem as well.
Yeah.
So we got lots
to
solve.
Well, I don't want to shortchange you. Make your closing statement. Yeah. You've only got 30 seconds, Ms. Lawyer.
Okay, so get down to the courthouse or to the county clerk's office, 500 Vermont Street. It's super easy to go in and vote early or on the 25th of February. Please get out and vote. It's really important that everybody votes. I don't care which way. Everybody loves this community, but just get out and vote.
Okay, 25th February. Laura McReynolds on the ballot. If you live in the 5th Ward, be sure to pull a 5th Ward ballot where Mike Ryan and Laura McReynolds. Is there anybody else running?
No, it's just the two of us, and that'll be it. So even if you're a Democrat, you can pull in Illinois, you can pull a Republican ballot and go vote for me.
Okay, thank you very much.